No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds. Arizona Cardinals fans, good evening. This is your host, Jess Root, for Revenge of the Birds Radio. And the show is back. We took 2 weeks off to let free agency settle a little bit. And, well, we've got some things to talk about tonight. So, welcome back. We'll have Seth Cox on the line as we normally do for our... We're usually a day late. Today, we're actually a day later. If you're listening live, of course, Revenge of the Birds Radio. This is the Arizona Cardinals talk for Cardinals fans by Cardinals fans, brought to you by RevengeOfTheBirds.com from SB Nation, the best Arizona Cardinals site, community, and content combination you can find on the web. I personally do run the site, so it's most of the content comes from me. So I'm a little bit partial towards it, but you won't find a better group of Cardinals fans, intelligent Cardinals fans, passionate Cardinals fans, as you will. Great discussion, great content on the web. And, well, there's lots to talk about since the league year began. The last time we were with you, we talked about the preview, what the Cardinals might look at moving forward, the positions they might address, players and whatnot. And we've got some news. So why don't we go ahead and get started with the headlines, the Cardinals and NFL headlines to start off the show. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can call in live at 646-478-3787. That's 646-478-3787. You can join us, talk to us on the line, give us your comments, have your questions. Seth and I can discuss them. And if not, if you're listening to this via download, of course, you can also head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com. We will have this posted to listen to on the site itself. And you can converse and comment with other listeners. You can comment on Facebook as well at Facebook.com/RevengeOfTheBirds. Or also use Twitter. Twitter.com. And our handle for Revenge of the Birds is @RevengeOfBirds. No the. So let's get started with the headlines. Let's kind of go over what's happened in the past couple of weeks. What we do now, who have the Cardinals lost? The Cardinals have lost a few players to free agency. They did cut Darnell Dockett. He ended up signing with the San Francisco 49ers. We'll talk a little bit about them and the kind of the dumpster fire it appears it has become over there. They lost Antonio Cromartie. Antonio Cromartie signed a four-year $32 million contract with the New York Jets, teaming up once again with Darrell Revis and joining former defensive coordinator for the Cardinals, Todd Bowles, who is now the head coach. He has himself a couple of bright, shiny new toys to play with in the secondary with a great defensive front. They lost nose tackle Dan Williams, who signed a four-year contract with the Oakland Raiders. He's making a boatload of money, much more than the Cardinals wanted to pay him. They also lost wide receiver Ten Ginn, though granted they did cut him. He rejoins the Carolina Panthers, where he played one season before joining the Cardinals, signed a two-year deal with them. The Cardinals also lost last year's starting right guard Paul Fanica. He joins the Kansas City Chiefs on a three-year contract worth more than $8 million. That's a pretty good haul for the journeyman. As we look at the team players that the Cardinals retained, they re-signed three players. They brought back long snapper Mike Leach for another year. They brought back Alameda Ta'amu, who was going to be a restricted free agent. They chose not to tender him. Was actually kind of a question whether he would return or not. They bring him back on a one-year contract. They also brought back offensive lineman Bradley Sowell, who will supposedly, as of right now, will likely be the swing tackle once again. So that's who they re-signed. Who did they gain? They signed several players. They added, which was, I will tell you, a surprise to many, So the biggest addition was left guard or guard. We're assuming he will be left guard. Mike Iupati, previously of the San Francisco 49ers, three-time Pro Bowler, gave him a five-year, $40 million contract. They added Sean Weatherspoon, linebacker, formerly of the Atlanta Falcons, had injury problems, signed a contract worth for 1 year, about $3.8 million. They added defensive lineman Corey Peters, also from the Atlanta Falcons. So they gutted the Falcons' defense. They took pretty much the only decent players they had and brought them over here. Corey Peters joins the Cardinals on a three-year contract worth a little more than $9 million, with incentives up to more than $11 million. Defensive lineman Corey Redding signed a two-year deal. The veteran joins the Cardinals after a few seasons with the Colts, where he happened to play when Bruce Arians was offensive coordinator there. And they add center/guard A.Q. Shipley, offensive lineman, mainly a center, can play guard as well. Started a few games for the last couple of seasons, was with the Colts twice in the last three seasons. It was a player that the Cardinals have tried to obtain. He comes to town, signs a two-year contract, actually a pretty moderate contract of backup money, pretty much. And we'll talk about that. So, and then kind of around the league, right before we bring Seth Cox on the line again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. We're talking Arizona Cardinals football free agency. We're going to talk about Adrian Peterson as the rumors have continued to swirl around and around and around and around. Without not actually sources or news, just lots of talk. Adrian Peterson reportedly still unhappy with the situation with the Vikings. The Cardinals reportedly have interest. There's been some talk of what picks could be tossed around. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. comes out with a report on Tuesday saying that Peterson is done and that the Vikings are actually shopping him. That was the first we'd heard of that. The Vikings were actually shopping him before. They were just kind of sitting still on then. It was just a bunch of speculation of where he could end up. 49ers have made some news as they had several players. They had a few players retire. They have Justice Smith retired. They had Patrick Willis retire. Then suddenly they had Chris Borland retire. They lost Frank Gore, who joined the Indianapolis Colts. And so you've got a San Francisco 49ers team that's kind of turned into what some had called kind of a dumpster fire, was as they lost Jim Harbaugh. So they hired Jim Tomsula, and they're seeing all sorts of changes over there. But let's go ahead and start with our topics of the night. Again, the Revenge of the Birds Radio, talking Arizona Cardinals, free agency, and Adrian Peterson. That's the topic of the night. If you want to call in and give your comments, if you have questions, that'd be 646-478-3787. Again, thank you for listening live. If you are listening live or listening via download, whether it be through iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Blog Talk Radio community, or if you're listening through RevengeOfTheBirds.com. Thank you. If you haven't joined already, head over to RevengeOfTheBirds.com, become a member, join the masses of great Arizona Cardinals fans and read some great content and become part of a great network of websites of FSB Nation. So let's bring Seth Cox on the line as he has been waiting patiently to get through the headlines. Seth, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
Doing great. I hopefully we don't have any of those silly technical issues that we had the last couple of times. I think we got things squared away. It turned out to be just a personal error problem that I had with a computer setting. So let's avoid that. So let's avoid that on my part this time, since I'm supposed to be the guy that knows what he's doing. So we've got a lot to talk about, Seth. We got tons and tons and tons and tons as the Cardinals signed a bunch of players. They lost a few players. So give us your take for the five players the Cardinals gained. So they gained Iupati, they gained Weatherspoon, they got Redding and Peters and Shipley. Which signing do you like the best?
I think you have to start with the defensive side. I know everybody's high on Iupati, and I'll get to that in a second. But I think on the defensive side, you have to like the fact that they went quantity as well as possible quality. I know Corey Peters' agent, and I sent you the text he sent me. What was that? A couple weeks ago, that basically said, when I was talking on Twitter about how they were going to, there are some young nose tackles in the draft I liked, and he basically said that's not happening, and I wasn't bright enough to put two and two together, so. and they end up signing Corey to a really, based on what he could be if he's completely healthy, it's going to be a steal of a deal. Because the one thing he brings that Dan Williams couldn't bring is that three-down ability where, you know, he can kind of kick outside and be a five or three technique on certain downs. He can play that one or even the zero technique on other downs. And, you know, he's going to offer that versatility. And that's something I think we've heard a lot about from this Cardinals staff about what they want on defense. Corey Redding, same thing. Basically taking the spot of Darnell Dockett in terms of ability and veteran leadership. You and I talked about last show for, you know, the brief time we were on together, the promotion of James Betcher is fine, but they need that veteran voice that'll be in there and listen. And Redding knows Betcher, and Betcher knows Redding, and so that's going to be, you know, kind of a nice match there. You know, and then you look at Weatherspoon, and he's a guy that I know the Cardinals were high on when he came out of Missouri. I believe that was the draft after – who did they draft that year? The Cardinals drafted Dan Williams that year, I believe.
Yeah, they went Williams and who was the second round that year? I've got that up somewhere.
So I know then even they had eyes on whether.
No, they had Washington. So, I mean, so they picked up Darrell Washington in that draft.
Yeah, so I think they're, you know, they were thinking if Weatherspoon's there, we'll grab him. But, you know, Dan Williams, he went, 17, 19, somewhere around that range to the Falcons because he's a really good ball player. All of these guys, Peters, Weatherspoon, even Redding to an extent because of his age, all of these guys are low risk in terms of salary compensation with high reward. And so I'm okay with that because I think they address a lot of the needs with a variety of different players that they got on a budget because, let's face it, I mean, they didn't have a ton of money to spend. And obviously we'll get to the Upati signing, but they were going to make a big splash with Upati. And so they had to kind of go quantity on the defensive side because they went high end quality on the offensive side of the ball with Mike Upati. And I think that's kind of what they're going to hang their hat on. I know everybody's got their hopes up for Adrian Peterson. I mean, you and I have talked personally, you know, via text a lot. And I've said from the outset that the person I know that knows the Vikings well told me that it was going to cost the Vikings or the Cardinals a two. And it wasn't even like that's what the Cardinals are willing to do. It was the Vikings have a price in mind and they're not going to budge off it because they have no reason to, you know, and so that was their whole thing. Whether the Cardinals are actually willing to offer that or any of the other hoopla, you know, we'll get into. But going back to Upati, I think their goal and you know, kind of what Steve Keim wants to do is he wants to preserve this window with Palmer and Fitz by basically giving Bruce Arians no excuse not to run the football more. And the excuse the last couple of years was simply the offensive line wasn't really that good. I mean, we you know, were happy with Jared Beldier and he was great. But the interior offensive line was, you know, pretty trash. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's just honest. And, you know, they basically switched all three interior offensive line positions at this point. And those are hopefully upgraded. If they're not, then I think we're all going to be disappointed in the Upati signing. But, you know, they have one of, if not the best run blocking guards in the NFL now at left guard. And the center right guard position will figure itself out. And now all of a sudden you have a power, you know, tandem at left tackle and left guard that you can run those powers and ISOs and, you know, even get into some zone stuff because of their athleticism and ability to move on the left side, something that you couldn't do when it was Larson or college before.
And getting to the signing, so what I really liked is kind of the approach to it. And we'll talk about Mike Upati. And again, this is Revenge of the Birds, right? If you want to call in, give us a talk. I did see a caller come in who bailed pretty quick. be patient if you're on the line. If Seth and I are in the middle of a conversation, I will see you holding on the line. So don't bail. If you've got some good conversation, you got some question, feel free to jump in. Feel free to jump in. Stay on the line, and we'll get to you. I promise. I can see when you're in there. I saw one guy I didn't get a chance to screen before he came on, but it was really an interesting mix of how the Cardinals went about things. They didn't address a couple of positions, and I think in part that in itself tells you one thing. The fact that they didn't address the running back position early. Darren Urban at VerazeCardinals.com wrote a piece not too long ago about the running back position, the different options they have, whether it's draft a guy early, draft a guy late. There is a crop of running backs that many believe will be drafted in the first three rounds up to about 12. By this time last year, the Cardinals had already signed Jonathan Dwyer, so they had already addressed the position. The fact the Cardinals didn't address the position, I think, does point to one thing very clear. They really are thinking about Adrian Peterson. No matter what reports are coming out that they're not that interested, they are seriously thinking about it. Otherwise, they would have addressed it because they don't have a veteran in that room. They don't. They don't have a single veteran in that room. Their experienced guys happen to be Andre Ellington and Stephon Taylor, and they're two seasons of experience. So it tells me right there, the fact that they did not address the running back positions tells you they are really thinking about Peterson. That doesn't mean they're going to do it, but they're going to address if the Peterson thing doesn't happen, they will address running back. They didn't land a pass rusher, which is a little bit disappointing, but at the same time, it's understandable because, Jason Worlds ended up retiring, so that dried up the pass rushing pool a little bit, and they had their eyes set on Brian Arakpo. He ended up signing for big money and potentially really big money in Tennessee. And the Cardinals simply just lost out on that. Whether they would have paid that price and paid him that much money is a different story. But really, they had their eyes set on Arakpo, thinking they could land him and probably would try to get him on a budget, probably on a kind of a bargain deal that they've kind of been doing. But you have to like the things that they've done. They went out, they said, we want to add speed at linebacker. They added Sean Weatherspoon. They wanted to get more physical in the offensive line, particularly interior. What do they do? They picked up two guys. They picked up a guard. They picked up a center who can play guard as well. One of them being a big-time offensive lineman, and another who's had some success, who's graded out pretty well, and is a good guy because is a guy that the Cardinals have targeted. Then they add on the defensive line. They really do a good job of replacing their losses of Dan Williams and Darnell Dockett, adding a pair of players, like you said, in Peters and Redding, who are not particularly one-dimensional. Dan Williams, very much one-dimensional player, but really good at what he did. Darnell Dockett, a little more versatile, but if you look at his grades, like his Pro Football Focus, his grades when it comes to the run are not good. So he seemed to be a bit more, you could call it one-dimensional. He was a much more disruptive player than some people give credit for him. But you got positional versatility. Redding and Peters both can play across the defensive line, so they can fill an array of molds and of roles. And at the same time, on a defensive line, when there was a whole bunch of youth and uncertainty between Te'amu, between Kareem Martin, as we'll talk about, that's a thing to come up later. I haven't written about that Mike Drakey brought up. That he might not even see time on defensive line next year. He may bump him outside. You've got Ed Stinson coming off injury, and you've got Josh Morrow. That you have created a situation where you've got a good mix of veteran, younger veteran, and youth, and you put this youth in a situation where they have absolutely no guarantee of them making the roster, and they're not even real necessarily counting on them. It would be nice. You really can't complain about a single thing that the Cardinals did. I forgot to mention one of the things the Cardinals lost. They cut ties with Lyle Sunline. That was an understandable move, a sad move for the players in the locker room, a bummer for him as well, but it gives him a chance to land somewhere else.
I was going to ask you about that real quick. When you made a post on Revenge of the Birds about Lyle and how kind of all the players reacted to him being cut, do you think that was surprise, or do you think that was just like sorrow? Like, did you feel? I felt like the players were actually surprised that he got cut. Like he was going to be back. Which, I mean, we're not in the room and all that stuff, but I felt like that was an obvious one. But maybe, I mean, like I said, we're not there every day.
To me, it felt like it was the writing was on the wall that it was likely going to happen. But at the same time, I think it was more not necessarily surprised that a veteran was cut, more of the shock that a team captain was cut. And because he is Senlein really well respected in that locker room. He has been the leader of that offensive line. And that transitions now, that this now becomes Jared Vildier's offensive line. He is the leader in that group now. And if Iupati will be there, but he's new. Senlein was, I mean, Bradley Sowell is like, wow, he was shocked. And there was another, Watford as well. They were, I think it was a mix of shock that it would happen. It really kind of made it real for them. Yes, Darnell Dockett got cut, but he didn't play last year. But for that particular room, it was it made the NFL business real. Because I'm sure they felt that Lyle had a good year. They know that he played through injury. It seems like every single year you hear from an offensive lineman that there is an injury that never was reported on the injury report that they played through most of the year. Eric Winston, in an interview I had with him, talked about you could kind of see the first half of the season he battled through a calf injury, and that kind of coincided with his struggles a couple of years ago. While Senlein played hurt all much of last year, as he missed time during training camp as well. I think it was just a case where the end of the business of the NFL became real. And so there is sorrow, there is shock, and it isn't necessarily surprise, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. It's like, wow, that can happen.
Yeah, and I just was curious on what your take on that was, because I found it interesting, just kind of the responses on Twitter, you know, and the wow and oh my, you know, that was interesting to me. The one thing you hit on that I just wanted to comment on real quick was Arakpo. I think you were right. They wanted Arakpo. I think that was their, obviously, once Wordless retired, that was kind of their last shot. And you wonder how much that contract with Tennessee had to do with Wordless actually retiring, because that's an awful lot of money for a guy that hasn't been healthy forever.
Yeah, at the same time, you look at he did have the track record. I mean, I hemmed and hawed about that. I kind of went back and forth if you look at the injury. But if you look at his production after his first torn pec, he came back and had a great year. But then he tore the other pec last year. So he's shown, yes, he got hurt two out of the last 3 years, but it was a different muscle. And we've seen players come back from that sort of thing, and it shouldn't. At least with the muscle tear, it shouldn't come back. It's not like a joint or ligament or those type of injuries. Those muscle tears tend to be more freaky and take care of themselves. But you saw the production before, you saw the injury, then you saw a comeback where he played really well. The fact of his age and his skill set come into play, and to be honest, in part, one, the world's retirement, I'm sure, had something to do with it, because the supply was down. So the supply of pass rushers was down. But to be honest, I preferred Arakpo to Worlds. Worlds hasn't been a particularly, I mean, he's a Pittsburgh guy, but he hasn't been a fantastically productive outside linebacker in terms of pass rush. Arakpo gives you that. But I think he was able to get more money, this is why it took so long, is the fact that he had Arizona in his back pocket. So Tennessee had felt pressure because, now granted, it looked like he wanted to be there, but he was scheduled to come out to Arizona. Cardinals obviously wanted him, and I have no idea, but I get the feeling that the Cardinals probably wouldn't have ponied up that much money. Maybe. I mean, they showed they're willing to do it. They did that with Valdir a year ago. They did it with Iupati now. But it kind of became clear that Arakpo was the guy they wanted. because you never heard any chatter about Hughes coming over. Of course, he re-signed fairly quickly. The Justin Houston thing, that was all speculation. There was never going to be any serious, because it hasn't happened in 15 years where they go after a guy who's been franchised. Then you've got Greg Hardy, but that's a headache in itself, and he landed himself with Dallas just now. So you've got a bunch of unproven guys, and they had interest in some other guys, Brooks Reed. But when you look at the production, they weren't high-end pass rushers. There's nothing proven there, nothing really any better than what they had.
No, and I think the word was kind of out on the Cardinals. It's going to sound negative, but it's really not, that they're not looking to break the bank on anybody. I'm sure if Justin Houston would have been available, they would have, been willing to break the bank. But, like you said, Brooks Reed, are you really going to go offer him
a year or whatever? No.
The word was out. So, nobody literally even came here to visit. It wasn't like that all the pass rushers came. Like, they were linked to every single one of them. But
none of them made it.
Yeah, that was because everybody knew they needed a pass rusher, but I'm sure the word was out like, hey, they're going to lowball you, so don't even bother. And that's not a bad thing. Outside of Pernell McPhee, who was the one guy they were strongly linked to, do you feel like they missed on anybody? I feel like everybody got overpaid except McPhee. And McPhee even got overpaid. It's just he's at least young, healthy, and versatile, whereas Arakpo's young and really good, but just the injury concerns. When you look at what they brought in, everybody's an injury concern outside of Upati, and even Upati had some injuries last year that he talked about. So, they outside of Upati, they really hit the discount store where, sometimes you find those vintage items that are worth a lot, and then sometimes it's just, trash that you tried to make treasure and it didn't work out, and I only spent a couple bucks on it. I feel like that's kind of how their shopping was this year, and that's what good teams do. That's the one thing.
And it's a smart way to go, because if there's some, unless you're able to throw money at a solid quarterback and good quarterback, let's be honest, really outside of the aberration of Peyton Manning getting cut or Brett Favre getting cut, but they're already old, you don't see good quarterbacks hit free agency. They're hit free agency because they're not that good. That's why you have a market full of Brian Hoyers and Mark Sanchez. They are definitely talented enough to play in the NFL, but they're not difference makers. And I kind of joked at the fact that I wonder if Drew Stanton wishes, at least at some level, that he were a free agent this year. He would have gotten some money. Brian Hoyer, who played awful for much of the season, is getting the money he got there in Houston to battle out with Ryan Mallett. Good luck, Texans fans. You have yourself a Kevin Cobb, John Skelton battle coming to you when you've got Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett duking it out for the starting job. Good luck. I'm glad that hot mess is not in Arizona anymore. Goodness.
No, but you're exactly right. This is a change in direction from the Cardinals, where yes, they made one big signing, but you and I, again, we talked off the air about this. Good teams don't win free agency and then go win the Super Bowl. Good teams win in the draft and pick up a part or two in free agency. You look at the Patriots, they picked up, Darrell Revis for a season. It wasn't like they got Darrell Revis to a, 5-year, $120 million contract. It's very rare that teams that win the free agency period actually go out and perform. And it's because they're further away than just, signing all these names. And I feel like the Cardinals are finally in a spot where they don't need to go sign all these names. They can get one big piece, Upati. They can get a lot of nice pieces, Peters especially, in Redding, and then they can get a wild card in Weatherspoon, who, we talked about this too. He could be Dansby or Cromartie, where he comes in, plays 1 year, balls out, and then goes and signs a 4 year, $24 million deal somewhere, and the Cardinals say, okay, good luck, because that's kind of what they've done recently. They found guys that needed a chance to prove themselves. They did it in a very dynamic defense, and then they left, and they took the paydays. And, eventually that might catch up to the Cardinals, but right now it hasn't.
Let's talk a little bit about let's talk about the Upati. Let's kind of move to the big one, the signing Upati. That's the second year in a row where the Cardinals have thrown big money at an offensive lineman. And not only that, he's considered not another team's trash. It's not a Darren College sign. Very capable offensive lineman, but he was an offensive lineman that a championship team was willing to part with. So you keep that sort of thing. The Cardinals brought back Levi Brown after they cut him it wasn't a horrible contract, but it was definitely more than you would think they would try and sign it for. Now, granted, in part that had to do with the market change. The free agent market changed in 2013 because that year the cap was flat. So veterans there were a lot of veterans that got signed to really small deals. The past couple of years, the money came back because the salary cap went up. But if you look at the Cardinals have thrown big money, and that's because they haven't had the time to draft. Keim has been said he wants to build the lines. He's doing that. You add Jared Valdir, you add Mike Upati, draft Jonathan Cooper, and we're going to talk a little bit about them. You got a Bobby Massey, and so they are doing themselves. They're giving Carson Palmer protection, and this is the kind of thing I see as well. When you don't have a franchise quarterback, you have to make your team strong enough that if you get a journeyman or a placeholder, that they can be successful. So 2, 3, 4 years down the line, when they still got this solid offensive line, if Logan Thomas doesn't work out or they're good enough where they don't get a draft really high, they could go with the Drew Stanton or pick up another veteran Carson Palmer-ish type quarterback and roll with him for a year or two and have success until you can find that actual franchise guy. And it's not a bad way to go. Now, the Upati signing is interesting for a couple of things. For one, they paid him a lot of money. Two, he's really good at run blocking and questionable in pass blocking, although there's some numbers. I mean, he did a better job with Alex Smith than he did with Colin Kaepernick, whatever that has to do anything, at least grade-wise. And he didn't break his foot last season. He said he broke his foot in the championship game the previous postseason and was feeling lingering effects. So he didn't participate in OTAs. He was trying to catch up in training camp. And in fairness, if you look over the last half of the season, the way the Pro Football Focus grades go, he had much better second half than he did a first half. They paid him a lot of money. He's obviously good at what he does. Assuming he can not get hurt, he stays healthy or gets healthier. The thing that stood out to me is the position he plays, is the fact that they drafted who they thought he was, Alan Faneca type Hall of Fame potential left guard in Jonathan Cooper. And then they throw big money at a guy who's going to play his position. That says a lot to me. They're not counting on. I know they want him to develop and they expect him to do good things. But the fact that they threw big money at a guy who plays his position, they're now saying, Cooper, you play right guard. Instead of when they said, when he come up, okay, we're going to move Darren College, the veteran, to the right side because Cooper's played on the left side, then that's better. Now they're saying, nah, not Coop, you're going to have to prove yourself on the right side.
Well, yeah, and I think what happens with that is that you look at Upati and you say, okay, you have a guy that, an all-pro, and then you have a guy that played in two games in his career. We're going to put the all-pro at the left guard spot. And you can battle it out with A.Q. Shipley and Ted Larson and Earl Watford and Anthony Steen for the right guard or center position. And if you don't make it, well, then, you know, we'll figure it out. But, I mean, you look at what they did, you hit the nail on the head. And something that you and I have talked about on the show before, Bruce Arians has, like, zero patience for injured players, none whatsoever. Fair or not, that's just his personality. He doesn't do well with the injured players. I think that's what
he doesn't mind injured players as long as they're busting their butt to come back ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. It's like you saw Tyrann Mathieu come back ahead of schedule. You hear these reports all the time about Carson Palmer being ahead of schedule and things of that nature. And the two guys that have, you know, you were waiting to hear about and you wondered about, Ryan Williams and Jonathan Cooper, you never heard anything in the offseason, and all of a sudden, you know, they're getting reps with the second team, and they're, you know.
And Te'amo, too. Te'amo, too. Oh, like, yeah, he was ahead of schedule. Right. He just fell. You know, he just disappeared.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the Upati thing is, you hit it on the head. They're like, well, Jonathan Cooper, you are now just one of the guys. You know, we still would like you to work out because, you know, you're the first pick in this era, but you know, you're just one of the guys now. Like, you're not going to get the Upati Valdir treatment, probably not even the Massey treatment. Like, he's got to go compete with a bunch of guys. I mean, when I say A.Q. Shipley, Ted Larson, Earl Watford and Anthony Steen are competing with Jonathan Cooper.
That's really sad. That's really a sad state, because you've got Larson, journeyman, Shipley, barely a starter, mostly backup. You've got a fourth round project, and you've got a second year undrafted player that this prime number seven pick is battling. And there shouldn't be any question, but there is.
Yeah, and so with Upati, what it does is, like I said earlier, I think it creates it's kind push towards, okay, you know, we did it your way the first 2 years. We had a ton of success, 21 wins, you know, in the first 2 years. But we saw the first season that it was about finding the rhythm and the timing in the passing game, and that took a lot of time. And then once it developed, you know, it was great, but it was too late. And then in year two, we saw, well, you relied so heavily on the pass that your starter had a freak injury with the nerve and then blew out his ACL, and then your backup got killed. So let's maybe look at running the ball more. And you know what, Bruce? I'm going to give you a great offensive line. And that's, you know, that's what they're trying to build. Whether they end up being great or not, that's another story. But the names that are there right now, I mean, if you look at it, you know, Valdir is one of the top, 10 left tackles in the NFL. That's a statement that the Cardinals have never been able to say. They have a top five left guard in the NFL. They have a top 10.
They have an above average right tackle who run blocks quite well.
Yeah, they have a top 10 pick who should play on the interior. And they, like you said, Bobby Massey is an above average, probably top 15, maybe top 12 right tackle who can run block. They're built to run the ball all of a sudden. So, you know, I think that was time's pushback of, you know, and this is something that we've talked about. They stay in their lanes, yes, but time's going to build the roster that he sees is the best for not just 2015, but also 2017, like you talked about. Like, this isn't, okay, we're going all in 2015. This is, we're going to build a roster that can compete in 2015, 2016, 2017, and you know, and whereas Bruce Arians has to go, okay, 2015, that's all that matters right now. So I think that's what this Upati signing is. We're not going to wait on Jonathan Cooper to see if he can figure it out. We're going to get a guy that for probably three more years at least, where, you know, he's guaranteed that money, is going to be one of those top five to seven left guards in the NFL. So we should be good. You know, after year three, if it, you know, he starts to fall off, well, okay, then we have no dead money and we'll cut him. No big deal. But for the next 3 years, we don't have to worry about the left tackle or the left guard position. And that's not something that you can ever say about the Arizona Cardinals.
Absolutely. And it's going to really, as we move forward, the two positions, the center position, the right guard position, I think are going to be, while they're not big position, but it's going to be real interesting to see what they do there, just because the numbers, just because of the personnel. What do they think of Anthony Steen? How does he develop? What about Earl Watford? He's just kind of been a guy so far. Does he take the next step? Does Cooper develop at all? Does he stay healthy? Because he went from a guy in college who'd never really suffered any injuries at all to a guy that broke his leg, that had turf toe, that broke his wrist. And all of a sudden you have a guy who's he's never experienced that. So you don't know what you're going to get. And then you've got Shipley to Larson. Who's going to stand out? Shipley's salary numbers are insanely low. Larson's number goes up, so he's easily cut. So if you decide that Steen has developed enough, whether he takes a starting job at center or at right guard, or is your swing guy behind Shipley, or if Steen didn't develop enough, then you roll with Larson and Shipley playing perhaps center. Although I imagine entering off-season workouts that it's going to be Shipley that's sitting there at the starting position, and Larson will begin as the starter at right guard. I will imagine that's how that will look based on how things start. He already was a starter. He shouldn't be bumped down to Cooper, that sort of thing. It's really kind of interesting to think about that. The defensive side of the ball, let's talk about that defensive line. If you look at the addition of Redding and Peters, what do you see that doing to the defensive line as a whole? Do you see that between the two defensive end positions and the nose tackle that they might not need to address in the draft, or how do you see that playing out, especially they got as the young players that they do back there?
Well, I think, as you know, we'll hit on them shortly, with Kareem Martin likely moving back to outside linebacker, which is odd. I mean, I get it and I don't at the same time. He basically had like the same impact Calais Campbell did in year one. So I'm not sure why it's like, oh, we got to move him to outside backer, but that's another story for another day. I think with Redding, you know, I think the starters are going to be Redding, Peters, and Calais. And then you have a rotation of Frosty and Ed Stinson and Alameda Te'amu. So those are your, you know, six. And they usually carry, what, seven, or do they carry eight defensive linemen?
It's going to be six or seven, I think is typical. I think they carried a seventh defensive lineman much of the year simply because of someone being banged up. But I think the year before, I think that six was kind of the norm. So six, maybe seven.
So you could see them drafting, because what, like we said earlier, Redding and Peters offer versatility on that line. So you could see them drafting a guy that can play pure nose, or, you know, a guy that's more of a tweener, like outside backer, defensive end, which seems to be what they really want. Like going after Pernell McPhee this year, and was it Mike Neal last year that they went after that was from Green
Yes,
Bay?
Yes, it was.
So it's kind of same body type, and a guy that I'm writing about tonight. There's guys like Preston Smith and the guys whose name I can't pronounce in the draft that played at UCLA that, you know, kind of do the same thing. I think you could see them do it that way, but I'm not sure if they're going to go like add anybody else that's like a pure, you know, five tech or a pure nose tackle, just because I think Redding and Peters give them the versatility to do multiple things. The one thing I'll say is I think with the signing of Peters and re-signing Te'amu, is you could see some more four-man fronts that we saw kind of last year, where you have like a Peters and Te'amu inside, and then you move Calais over to that five technique on the right side of the offensive line, so the defensive left, and then you bring Okafor in to put his hand in the dirt and kind of be a pass rusher. I think you could see that too, where you get Te'amu and Peters both on the interior at the same time, especially against a team that, you know, can run the ball well, where you may not would be super comfortable with Kevin Minter playing inside linebacker.
That's something to talk about. We're going to talk about just a second too. I see Te'amo as more of an insurance policy. I see that the Cardinals very well could add a player. I think Josh Morrow is kind of on the block. I think he only makes that roster and the 53-man roster through injury. I think he was an intriguing player. I think he gets bumped. I think they like Stinson up. But again, a fifth-round player, you got several good games out of him. If he doesn't work out this year, it's no big deal. But you have to kind of count on Stinson. Maybe, you know, Kareem Martin should be there in the mix. And if they draft a guy who can play inside, I think that's where you're going to see Te'amu fighting for his life on the roster. He's got a good spot on the roster as a potential to be a really solid nose or to be good depth. But if they draft a guy, say a Carl Davis or something like that, then he's kind of put on watch. Hey, guess what? Your spot. And the fact that they brought him back, they didn't tender him. So obviously he was brought back on less than the $1.5 million that he was going to get paid with the low tender. So he was brought back basically on almost nothing. No money's guaranteed. So Te'amu's on the chopping block to me. Morrow's on the chopping block. And at least the defensive line spot for Kareem Martin might be on the chopping block as they might bump him back out. Just maybe in the whole Kareem Martin thing, I think it might have more to do with he really didn't show anything a year ago. No sort of real potential on a few plays. But since they see him more as a better pass rusher, then or maybe it is moving to more of a four-man front. I mean, that might be it. Where he plays more the five tech there that they do. So if they're looking to add pass rush, hopefully they did develop Okafor more, and then maybe Martin can give them something and they didn't need to sign that guy.
Well, and I think that's part of it that you kind of hit on, that they have a good, I mean, in theory, they have a good six-man rotation where, you know, Martin's not going to play because, like you said, he didn't really show anything. I mean, Josh Morrow showed more, so why, you know, yeah, I understand he was a third-round pick, but you can't get caught up in where these guys came from. Yes, you want your draft picks to work out, but just because they were draft picked doesn't mean if they don't show you anything in the practice, you know, and obviously he showed nothing in the games to warrant playing time, that, you know, you keep pushing him out there, whereas Morrow did have one really nice game. He didn't really see the field much after that, but he did show a nice game. So, you know, I think to your point on Martin moving back outside, you know, allegedly that could be that they are kind of worried about what's going on at outside linebacker. So maybe it's just time to get him reps out there in the offseason and get him used to doing things from the outside backer position. You know, because they are drafting 24, and like you said already, the edge rusher market kind of dried up quick with a lot of, you know, bigger numbers for lesser players. So maybe that was their plan. You know, like, we'll take a swing at Arakpo and Willibus, and, well, Willibus retired, and Arakpo signed a ridiculous deal. So, okay, well, Kareem, you're going to play outside backer throughout the OTAs and in the offseason because we need you to get reps. And then, you know, if a guy falls to 24 or we find somebody at 55 or 54, whatever it is in round two, then maybe we'll move you back down and let you get some reps inside. But for now, based on what the team has in terms of just depth chart at edge, you know, outside backer, it probably just makes more sense for him to be there and to get those reps and kind of get familiar with it, because I mean, honestly, if you're going to identify one weak spot on the team outside of that running back position that we talked about earlier, it's
edge.
It's the edge. They don't have anything. I mean, Alex Okafor was nice, don't get me wrong, but
you don't want to count him as to be your elite guy. It just, it should have been Abraham Okafor. That's what it was supposed to be a year ago.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you're at the point now where maybe you have to go out and get like a, I don't know if it was Dwight Freeney or somebody that's old that became available. I forget who it was, but maybe, you know, those are, he's one of those July guys that they go and sign real late. But I mean, at this point, yeah. So just get Martin reps in the off season. And if you find somebody in between now and September, whatever, whenever the first game is, great. If not, then, you know, you got to have a guy that's at least had reps and knows what he's doing.
Talk about the linebacker position there, the addition of Weatherspoon. I'm not quite sure. I don't know which way it means. Now, the fact that Nate Irving visited, left, and apparently either the Cardinals weren't interested enough or he was pricing himself out, or maybe he wasn't healthy enough. I thought that the potential addition of Nate Irving was a signal to the end of Kevin Minter. Since they didn't, I'm not quite sure what to think of Weatherspoon, whether he's going to be more Carlos Stans, because they really did, in the interview that he did on Arizona Sports, they gave him the keys to the defense. He will be Carlos Stansby. But I don't know if that means he's going to be Darryl Washington until Darryl Washington comes back and then play Carlos Stansby, or if he's meant to replace Darryl Washington, period. And they don't bring Washington back. I don't know which way that's going to go. I keep going back and forth.
Yeah, and I sent out a tweet today, and I didn't get any responses. But I was interested because, like, the vitriol, and rightfully so, that the Cowboys are taking for the Greg Hardy thing, you have to wonder, like, if the Cardinals are paying a lot of attention to all of that. Because, you know, they've really done an excellent job of distancing themselves from Darryl Washington for the past year. But now it's like, it's time. And, you know, that report's out there of like what he did with the, you know, the marks on her neck and things of that nature. And so you have to wonder if, you know, Greg, the reaction to signing Greg Hardy, if that will weigh into what the Cardinals do with Darryl Washington. But I sent you this text, and I stand by this. Sean Weatherspoon's here to be, you know, Darryl Washington until they either find somebody that can else that can be Darryl Washington or Darryl Washington's back, at which point, you know, he'll be the Larry Foote or Carlos Dansby of, you know, the defense. And that, I mean, he's going to be the Larry Foote or Carlos Dansby right off the bat because of his veteran leadership and the fact that, you know, I talked to Scott Karasik and Andrew Parsons about Weatherspoon, and that's what they both said, is you got a guy that, you know, he wants to be out there and he wants to lead, and he kind of, you know, has that same mentality of Foote and Dansby, where they're just natural leaders like that. So, you know, hopefully his play is closer to Dansby than it is Foote, but I think that's the idea, is he's going to be the linebacker that doesn't come off the field until Kevin Minter either proves that he can stay on the field or until Darryl Washington's reinstated and the Cardinals bring him back. And then, you know, Minter's a, you know, second-round backup. And that just kind of, like I said earlier, that you have to get past where he was drafted and just focus on the player at this point. And honestly, if Kevin Minter is your backup, that's probably not a bad backup. It's just
not at all
what we had hoped for when they took him ahead of a guy like Kiko Alonso, who is, you know, was one of the better linebackers in the NFL his rookie season before he got hurt.
And to be honest, if they decide to keep Darryl Washington, if they try to bring him back, Weatherspoon is the perfect, just like Carlos Stans, he is the perfect type of linebacker because he gives you that sideline to sideline speed and the smarts, because Darryl Washington is better at playmaking than defensive leading. That allows him to focus on the athleticism and the just the fast part of like 2 years ago when he had all those, or 3 seasons ago when he had all those sacks, just being fast. He didn't show that kind of when he was in the NFL top 100 players. One of the comments that was made is Carlos Stansby knew what was going on. Larry Foote knew what was happening. Darryl Washington never had to read anything because he was faster than anyone. So we'd just be in the backfield already. And to have a guy like Weatherspoon who can who can diagnose a play, who can put people in position, that allows Washington to just make plays and not have to think about all that other stuff, which makes it a good pairing. Even if they don't go with Washington, hopefully Minter pans out, and then you have the right. Were Larry Fitt younger and faster, it would have worked out just fine and had Minter been healthy. But because you didn't have speed at both positions, Minter's, you know, his straight line speed isn't bad, but his change of direction isn't. He doesn't have quick feet. And with Weatherspoon, you get the speed, plus that you still get that compliment that they wanted Minter to be to Washington. You've got the speed with Washington, you've got the thumper with Minter. You get that you get that still with Weatherspoon Minter, as opposed to Foot Minter, who Foot was smart but was more thumper than anything else, simply because he didn't have the foot speed anymore.
Yeah. And I think with, you know, Minter, you have a downhill linebacker who may have been drafted out of position to play in a 3-4, especially where Todd Bowles asked so much of their inside linebackers, you know, to be able to scrape and move. You know, Weatherspoon, Washington's a freelancer. You know, he's kind of like a jazz musician who is able to just kind of riff with everybody, whereas these other guys are like studio musicians who come in and, you know, they play along with the rest of the, you know, whatever's asked of them, the band at that point. That's kind of how I view those guys. And Minter hasn't really figured out if he's either yet, you know, so Minter is like a 12th grade trumpet player at this point. So he's got to figure out, you know, how he's going to fit into this whole scenario, because Weatherspoon, you know, can be a guy that makes the big plays, but he plays well within the defensive scheme. Whereas, you know, like you said, Washington can freelance and make huge plays. Yeah, he'll give up some plays, but he can make huge plays because he's just that much better than everybody else. So
he's so much more athletically gifted than everyone else in the field.
Yeah, so it's just one of those situations where you have to know that linebacker, inside linebacker, is still a need. And the fact that they brought Nate Irving in to, you know, kind of check that out proves that it's a need. So maybe they look for a guy like Shaq Thompson or Eric Kendricks in the draft who covers linebackers, who can match up with a Jimmy Graham now that they'll face twice a year. Or maybe, you know, they have a head nod of what's going on with Darrell Washington. So they're like, okay, we'll just let this play out, and then we'll bring him back after 2 to 4 to 6 games and let him be the guy he is. And, you know, hopefully in that time, Minter develops into a consistent two-down backer, and then after a year, Weatherspoon can, you know, move out and we'll be fine. But, you know, it's just a weird scenario with a lot of moving parts still. So I think as we get closer to the draft, we'll be able to hear more if linebacker, inside linebacker, excuse me, is still in play. But I think the fact that they brought Nate Irving in says that it is still in play and it's something that they're thinking about.
And let's talk about the guys that left. I mean, for me, are they going to miss any of these guys? Lyle Sinlay, they will miss. I think they're going to miss Lyle Sinlay, but not for the same reasons. It'll take a little bit of an adjustment the leadership turns over to Veldier and Upati. Maybe a little bit to Bobby Messi, I don't know. If you look at some of the other players, Dan Williams, they did very well. The Cardinals did very well to soften the blow for the loss of Dan Williams and the loss of Darnell Dockett. I don't think they've lost anything from either of those. I mean, now the run defense individually I think it's a net negative, little bit negative, but the fact that both players can get to the passer kind of negates that, because Dan Williams was very one dimensional. I don't think it was a pipe dream to ever think that Antonio Cromartie was coming back. So while they'll miss him, he was, as we said several times, he was a luxury in that defense a year ago. And we're going to have to roll with whether you're Justin Bethel or, you know, Jerrod Powers or who somebody they draft. I don't know. But I don't think there was anyone who really thought that Cromartie was ever going to be back. So they were where they were 2 years ago when they had a pretty good defense. So
Yeah, and I think you and I, talked about it that Pro was going to be out of their price range. I mean, I asked the question when I think it was Brandon Flowers of San Diego re-signed, and he got what, 8.5 million. I'm like, there's no way that Pro's getting under 8 at this point a year, which you and I knew. I mean, from the jump that I think they were offering, the Cardinals were offering 5, right? Like, I think that's the number we were told, 5 or 6. So, I mean, you can say whatever you want about loyalty and, playing for a championship, but I'm sorry, if you offer me $3 million more a year over 4 years, yeah, that's I'm gonna go play for
Yeah,
the
I can go cry myself to sleep with wiping my face with the money that I'm saving because I didn't win a championship. And honestly, I mean, it wasn't a bad move because that's a really intriguing. Well, you don't think they're really going to compete in that division in terms of what they do defensively. Crow loved Todd Bowles. He likes
Oh
what
yeah.
he gives. He loved Todd Bowles. He's paired up back with Darrelle Revis. They've got a great defensive front. That's going to be a fun defense to watch, and it's going to be a fun defense for him to play for. So they will be competitive if they get any sort of quarterback play.
Yeah, and so I think Dan Williams, like you said, Corey Peters was a good signing to soften the blow, with the upside to be a great signing. I mean, obviously health is the main thing with all these guys they signed on defense, but Sinline, I don't think you, like you said, he you're not losing anything in terms of on-field play, maybe line calls, but I mean, unless the guards miss the calls, then Sinline, I hate saying it like this, but I mean, two quarterbacks went down under his watch, basically, on free passes, on free blitzes. From or not free blitzes, but free runs from the interior offensive line. I mean, both those injuries came from Palmer having to move because of interior pressure and Stanton having to run and got sacked because of interior pressure. So, those are calls that you and I won't know if they were made, but it looks like they were missed. And who that's on is anybody's guess, but I don't think from an on-field standpoint it's going to be a huge miss. I think he and Dockett are, similar in that vein where you're not really going to miss what they did on the field, but you're definitely going to miss their leadership and what they brought, to the huddle and especially to the locker room where they were respected.
Now, in terms of guys that we have that are still out there in the market, Rob Houser, Sam Acho, Marcus Bernard, handful of guys. Do you think any of those guys will make it back? I personally don't get the feeling. While Houser might be a nice addition if he's cheap, it doesn't look like any of them are coming back. Maybe Bernard, just simply because he's more on that back end of the special teams. I just don't get the feeling that any of these guys, unless it's getting closer to OTAs and training camp, that they'll be back. I don't think they will be. Except for one, and I'm going to talk about that in a second, but hold, there's one player I think might be back, and it'll be a surprise. But
No,
it wouldn't surprise me.
I
Go
don't
ahead,
think
go ahead.
anybody's coming back. I mean, maybe Sam Acho if like they can't get somebody in the draft and they're like, well, we just need somebody. I mean, that we can trust and we don't like any of these other guys out there. What it tells you, and I know there's like a lot of good players or average players, maybe good, I don't know, that are still out of the market, but none of these guys are like commodities. It's all now. All right, who can give us the most bang for our buck? Acho, Bernard, Houser has been, kind of shopped around to a couple teams, but I think he's asking for too much money based on what he's actually never, produced. So, Finline's been a free agent for about a week now, and I don't think I've heard any teams have even called him. So, I mean, we'll just see. I just don't see anybody. I mean, like maybe Acho late in the process, if post draft he's still available and they didn't get anybody early that they wanted to, they probably could bring him back because he's, you know, not a terrible player, and he knows the system, so it would probably be, you know, good to have somebody like that.
In terms of positions, there are two positions. The one that I brought up, the running back position, is interesting that they haven't addressed yet. And I think that's because the Cardinals are really seriously bouncing around the idea of Adrian Peterson. Tight end. I was surprised they didn't do anything with the tight end position. The fact that they didn't land a guy, because Matt Spaeth ended up getting signed. The Cardinals didn't end up signing James Casey. I don't recall if he signed with anyone. But I guess, at least for now, it appears that they are content with John Carlson as their veteran in the room, which he made a good addition to that room. I don't get me wrong. He didn't produce like it, but he's a good addition to that room. And I was just surprised that they did. Were you surprised with that they – and I get that the offense, the outside linebacker, I know why they didn't address it. They didn't need to really address cornerback because they still have Powers and they've got Bethel, who they think could be something special. Safety, they're set. But the running back position, I mean, the wide receiver, they don't need anyone that's out there that's a veteran. But running back and tight end were the two positions I was like, that's interesting. Again, the running back, I think, is kind of the Peterson situation. And tight end, I think it just says, you know, as unhappy as fans were with John Carlson, and even though he lost a lot of playing time, it tells me the trust that they have in him as a leader in that locker room and the potential that he has in the offense still.
Yeah, and I think with, like, the running back position, they were interested in everybody, but the market set itself, like, so high. I think it was similar to the running back position or the linebacker, outside linebacker position, where it was like, all right, you know, we're interested in all these guys, but, I mean, we're not going to pay whatever, you know, DeMarco Murray got paid to go to Eagles. And, I mean, even
the McCoy's contract and...
Yeah, what's CJ Spiller end up with, like 4-20 or something like that? So, I mean, I think they were looking for like a 2-year, you know, $10 million maybe on a good back, or like a 1-year, $4 million on like a Frank Gore type. But all those guys got paid. I mean, one running back got like bargained. You know, none of them were a bargain. So, you know, I think they. No, I think their philosophy is this. If we get Adrian Peterson before the draft, then we don't have to worry about it in the draft. If we don't get Adrian Peterson before the draft, then we're going to have to draft a running back, because we don't want to go into the season with Andre Ellington, Kerwin Williams, and Stephon Taylor. I mean, that inspires me. You
know. As the potential to, I mean, Kerwin Williams did well. Andre Ellington, healthy. Yeah. It could work really well, but you don't want to go into camp counting on that. You can't do that.
No, especially when you've done so much for your offensive line, you want to have, you know, it's almost like the anti-Saints, where the Saints have had so many running backs, you know, in the last couple of years that can do different things. And now the Cardinals need running backs that can do different things. So, you know, I think you're right. I think they, you know, they are waiting patiently. I think, I don't even know if like Peterson's available, so to speak, in terms of like being eligible to be traded even. So, I mean, they may be waiting till like that appeal date on April 15th or whenever it is before anything's actually done. Cause then that's 2 weeks before the draft. And then I'm like, okay, well, that didn't work out. So we'll focus on the draft. And, you know, we got guys that we can look at in rounds 1, 2, and 3. And so, if we find one that we like there, then we'll pull the trigger. If not, then we'll start to pick through these vets that are kind of still sitting on the sidelines. But I think you're right. Peterson's obviously their first option. The alleged cost of a second rounder, I mean, it makes sense. As much as people are like, oh, Brandon Marshall went for, what, 2/5 to the Jets or whatever.
Peterson's on a different level. I mean, he's on a different level.
Well, and Jimmy Graham went for a first. I mean, yeah, I know they sent Max Unger too. So, I mean, they sent a Pro Bowl caliber center and a first round pick to the Saints for a tight end.
Who had a big contract too, mind you. Yeah. That doesn't happen a whole lot.
No, yeah, so exactly. If you're thinking that you're going to get Peterson for like a five. The Brandon Marshall or the Carson Palmer. I've seen that floated like, oh, they'll get him for what they got Palmer for. It's not happening because the Vikings don't have to trade him. That's what people don't get. Like, the Vikings have no, unless it's what they want in their terms, which, you know, like I said, from the beginning, I talked to somebody that I trust that knows the Vikings, and they said their terms are a second round pick. That's what they want, you know? And if that's true,
and they want him. I mean, and it, from all reports that come out, that the Peterson, when push comes to shove, he'll show up because he wants to play and he wants to be paid. Even if he doesn't like the situation, he's still going to show up.
Well, yeah, because he's not going to not make $14.5 million next year. I
mean, exactly.
I mean, they're dumb, and then they're just like asinine, and that's one of the things where like, all right, well, I'm not happy with the way you didn't support me in this situation, but I'm not unhappy enough to not make $14.5 million. So I'll come in and make that much money and be a little pissed off at you guys for this season or whatever. I mean,
let me come on. This is something I want to get out there, because it's probably something that won't be terribly popular, but I think the more I think about it, I think this is going to happen. I've said this a lot. It's something I've noticed, and I've written a lot about it. I don't know if everyone believes in this sort of thing, but I believe it's the way that Bruce Arians wants to have his positions. You need a veteran in every single room. You need a veteran in every single room. Cardinals get Adrian Peterson. Cool. You've got that. Now, the Cardinals don't get Adrian Peterson. Based on the backs that are out there, I'm going to put it out there. I think Jonathan Dwyer will come back. I think he'll be back. I mean, a lot of people say, no, there's no way. He still, based on tweets that he's had between back and forth, he and Tyrann Mathieu, he still considers himself a Cardinal, even though he doesn't have a contract. He's still an Arians guy. The deal that he got ended up being what got down to probation, or there was no jail time. If they don't land Adrian Peterson, they're going to draft a guy, and I think that I would not be surprised at all if Jonathan Dwyer's that veteran back again.
Yeah, and I mean, even if he's just a veteran through like training camp and the preseason, and then they cut him, and then, you know, God forbid another injury, and then they bring him back. I mean, the thing is with that is, if you're going to complain about bringing him back, but then be like, oh, I can't wait till Darryl Washington comes back.
Exactly.
You need to check it, because, there's no degrees of what they did, but by the law standard, you know, what Dwyer did was a misdemeanor, while what Washington did was a felony. So we're talking.
And he pled to a felony. He pled to a felony.
He pled guilty to it. So, yeah, exactly. So. I could definitely see that. Like you said, they have to have a veteran in the room, and it's an Arians guy, and so that'll be, you know, he'll probably call Rashard Mendenhall too at that point, where he's, you know, hey, Rashard, do you want to come back and play again?
He's like, nah, I'm having fun blogging and writing.
Yeah. So, but no, I could definitely see that, where, you know, he comes back on the same type of 1-year deal for, what was it, like, $800,000 or whatever.
Yeah, just veterans minimum, something small.
Yeah, and you know, they keep him around until training camp breaks, and then, or the preseason ends, and then he ends up being one of the last cuts, or he makes the roster because somebody's hurt or something. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Well, we've kind of hit the end of our topics, and oh, this is something that listeners, Seth's going to be happy. We're going to take a 2-week break. And then we're going to be talking NFL draft, leading up to the NFL draft. Seth Cox is going to be a happy man. And you're going to hear much more from him than you're going to hear from me, because he is draft guy. I'm pretend I know what I'm talking. There's guys I like, and I'll look more new to see. But Seth's all about the draft all year long. I'm about the draft about the last month before the draft. So Seth is well prepared. I'll be kind of prepared. So we're going to be back in 2 weeks. You're going to hear a happy Seth, unless there's some other strange news that we're going to have to bump draft talk. But what I think we're going to do is we're going to kind of break down. We're going to go over some position groups over the next, we'll come back in 2 weeks. We'll talk about some of the position groups, the prospects there from, you know, top of the draft to the bottom of the draft, things to look at. And we're gonna pick Seth's brain, and we're gonna talk a lot of rookies. How does that sound, Seth?
Sounds great, Jeff.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of another Revenge of the Burns radio show. We had no technical difficulties this time around, so hallelujah for that. Congratulations for me for figuring things out. Thanks for listening as we close in on, you know, hour 15 minutes of Cardinals talk. If you made it to the end, you rock. Thank you for listening live if you did so. If you've listened via download, please make sure to subscribe to iTunes or Stitcher Radio, or make sure that you become a member of edgeofthebirds.com, where I always post those shows, so you'll get to hear that at any time that there is a new show. Seth, thanks for being on as always. That's Seth. I'm Jess. Thanks for listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.